Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice weekly podcast for the needlework artists. Our artist this week from the Raspberry Rabbits, Michelle May. Michelle, welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, glad to have you. All right, we got to get the rabbit thing out of the way. What's the what's the fascination with rabbits?
Oh golly, it started when I was 9 years old.
Oh my, so this has got some history to it. Okay,
it does because I am 53, so it's been going on it's a long rabbit hole, let me tell you. But when I was little, I was nine, and my family, we lived in upstate New York, and it was very rural, and I always loved animals and stuff, and there weren't a lot of children around, and my mom said, oh, we're going to go to this cookout, and there's going to be lots of kids there, and, you know, it'll be really fun, and I was like, yay, so my brother, sister, and I were all excited. And then my mom said, like, the most horrible thing ever. She's like, Michelle, you have to wear a dress. And I'm like, what? You know, and I just, it's so clear because I'm, even to this day, a tomboy. And it's like, how am I going to play kickball and climb trees and run in a stupid dress? And I was, like, super pouty and crabby. And I hid under the bed. And then, I don't know about y'all, but back in the day when your mom said, you know, when they used your middle name, Michelle Marie,
Knew
you better just zip it and get on with it. So Michelle Marie, get in the car. So I get in the car and we go to the place and, you know, lots of kids there. And one of the girls that lived there, she said, oh, do you want to come see my pet rabbit? And I was like, what? And so she brought me in the house and she pulled out this black and white Dutch bunny and her name was Love. And I spent the entire day with that rabbit. I didn't care about the kids. I didn't care that I had that stupid dress on. I didn't care about any of it. I was like, right there, that began my love affair with rabbits, with a rabbit named Love. And so I've had rabbits my whole life. And as I've gotten older, the rabbits that I have now they're all rescues. They're unwanted Easter bunnies.
Oh.
And, so I do a lot, with that, and they're just special little creatures. And I have a rescue cat too. And she's deathly afraid of the bunny. So it's kind of funny.
Oh, that's great.
So you're one of those that saves the bunnies at Easter time every year. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so they, you know, the people get them for their kids. And, you know, they're great for some kids. But other kids, it's just like, oh, you really should have bought them a stuffed toy or a chocolate thing because, you know, now mom and dad are stuck taking care of them and they don't want to. So they end up at the rescues or sometimes they get set free, which is not a very good thing because they'll die. They become prey very quickly. Yeah. But I have a certain soft spot in my heart for them.
So how many do you have now?
I have two right now.
Oh, okay.
My one is really old. She's very old for a bunny, actually. She's 12. And she's her official name is Lady Hannah Goldenhair. And they all my rabbits usually have some kind of something. And then I have my other one that I got a couple years ago, 2018. His name is Henry the Eighth because he is my eighth rescue rabbit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's pretty neat. Okay. So then the raspberry for your company name, Raspberry Rabbits, where does that come in then? How do we put, because it's just fascinating to me, Raspberry Rabbits. Okay, that doesn't go together. Well, how does it work?
I know. It was kind of this, a really good friend of mine back in 1998, she did a lot of toll painting. Remember when a lot of people were doing toll painting back then? And she made this beautiful shaker hat box for me. And on the front of it, it has two rabbits and it says the Raspberry Rabbits Tea Room. And I love it. I still sits in my studio today. And I was like, you know, if I ever have a company, I want to name it the Raspberry Rabbits. And so that's where that came from.
All right, you win. Two great stories.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect.
And we haven't even talked about needlework. So
this is, my goodness.
Outstanding. Okay, so then the Raspberry Rabbits. Now, you had a corporate job before you started doing this, but has needlework always been in your life?
Not. Well, yes and no. I guess because when did it really start? So I started doing cross stitch when I was 20, and I had a lot of fun doing that. But prior to then, I did art and little things, you know, but not a whole lot as a child or a teenager. I took art class, you know, had art class in school, which was really fun. But not until I was 20 and a friend of mine introduced me to cross stitch, and I loved it. It was fun. And then, that same friend, she said to me one day, she's like, "Hey, do you want to go take a quilt class?" And I'm like, "A what?" And she said, "A quilting class." And I was like, "Okay, sure." So we went to the shop.
I'm Michelle. I'm up for anything.
Yes. Like, that sounds fun. Let's try it. Right. So, then I lived in Virginia Beach, Virginia at the time. And, so we went into this shop and I took a class from this lady called Charlotte Ann Gotti. And in the quilt world, everybody knows Charlotte. So I always say that if your first quilting teacher is Charlotte Ann Gotti, you're going to be hooked for the rest of your life because she's so much fun. She's totally hilarious, and it's her fault I got sucked down that rabbit hole. So, yeah. So that's how that all came about.
Wow.
Yeah. 1989. I was 21 at the time. Yep.
So often making quilts. So that was get a sewing machine and the whole shooting match or everything by hand?
The first quilt was by hand. And when I would give lectures and stuff, I kept that. I'm not a keeper of things at all. I enjoy things and I let them go is kind of how I am with stuff. But that quilt I kept because it was my first quilt and it was hand pieced and hand quilted. And I always like to, you know, show people like, okay, you might start here. You don't start off perfect, but, you know, here's where you start with something and you grow. And it was all done in blue calicos, which were popular back then. And so when I show people it now, I'm like, can we say hello, calico? Because, and there's a saying that we have here in Eastern North Carolina, the country folks say it a lot, but when something's not very pretty, we call it booger. And so I'm like, this is one booger looking quilt because it is.
But so you're lecturing on quilts. So you obviously developed some skill then.
I did. I guess it's just one of those things. I went on, I worked in corporate world, but part time. Nights and weekends, I taught quilting in a local quilt shop for 10 years and until she closed. And then, I kind of honed in on my skills and went from there. And then it was just kind of a hobby and a way to support my fabric habit.
Yeah. Oh, I so understand that.
It's like, oh, we got to have some extra money here to buy stuff we just got to have.
That's right. That fabric addiction.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, Beth, you know a little bit about that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So when you're working the corporate job and you have this going at night, how long was it tugging on you to say, look, I need to get out of this office and get on with this other thing?
Well, throughout my career of different things, I think things, you know, if you get this inkling about doing something, I think it just, you know, the universe, God, whomever, kind of makes things happen and work themselves out. And so my corporate job was actually in custom home building. I worked in that. I loved that job a lot. worked with a small builder, and I help people create their dream homes. And I do a lot of interior design work, and you know, designing different houses and things like that was super fun. But what happened was 2008 and the housing market crash.
And yes, it did. Yes, it did.
That kind of has a way of making you go, guess what? You're going to lose your job. So I got laid off officially in 2010, but I hung on for two more years with my boss, just kind of doing the bookkeeping and stuff like that, because in addition to the creative end, I was also office manager, bookkeeper, tax person. I mean, you know, all the icky stuff. And then, and then in 2012 is when I just took this hop of faith and I said, you know what, I'm going to take the Raspberry Rabbits full time. I had officially kind of done it in 2006, you know, just a little bit here and there. I kind of started my business. You know, I had my domain and all that good stuff. But 2012, 6 years later, is when I really decided, okay, I'm going to do this. So, and it's not like, you know, at that time I lived in New Bern, North Carolina, which is a small town, and there wasn't a lot of opportunities and that kind of thing. And I was just ready to have my own business and the freedom of that. So I took that hop of faith and here we are.
Scary when you did it? No.
Yes and no. I think it was kind of like anything. You get to the point where you know you're ready to do it, and the excitement takes over the fear. You know what I mean? It's like the fear goes to the background and you're like, I'm just going to do this. And it's more exciting than it is scary.
Okay. Because, I mean, you know, there's a real comfort in a corporate job with, even if you're about to lose it, you know, that paycheck every 2 weeks, and then to go to something like this where you're not
well,
sure.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and you're 100% right. And so, but I had this lovely buffer of a husband that has a government job.
Ah, okay.
So if it was just me, it would have been like, yeah, we're going to go work at Starbucks. So, okay. But I am very grateful that my husband has been working with the government for over 30 years. So, yeah, we're good.
Okay. All right. Yeah. You win there. Yep. That's great. So what is the Raspberry Rabbits when you started? Is it quilting?
Yeah, originally that's what I did. I did quilts. I sold a little of my own finished products. And then I made quilt designs and some embroidery stuff. And then I found wool. In 2011, I was like, wow. But prior to that, in 2009, when I was kind of thinking about, you know, I knew I was going to get laid off. I knew I needed to figure out what I'm going to do next. I found Baldani Thread Company, because I knew I wanted to partner with, you know, a thread company if I was going to do my own designs on things. And I reached out to a whole bunch of different people, and they really didn't want to take a chance on an unknown or a nobody, you know, somebody starting out. And Valdani, they were so kind, and they were like, sure, we'd love to work with you. And so I've been with them since 2009. They're the only threads that I use, because I'm kind of one of those, like, it's just this loyalty thing where they were so good to me and I love the product. And so so I started doing that, and then I found wool and I started playing around with wool. And so my designs evolved to different wool patterns and wool applique on fabric. And then I started doing, there's called reverse applique, where it's like usually you lay the pieces on the top. So like a circle, and then you cut another circle and put it on top. That's applique. But reverse applique is when you, like that first circle, you would cut a hole in it, and then the other circle goes underneath. So I call it a party trick, but I fell in love with paper cutting and different paper cutting artists. Hans Christian Andersen, I'm sure you know who he is, the author of The Little Mermaid, The Ugly Duckling. But what a lot of people don't know is that Hans Christian Andersen was also a prolific paper cutter. And so he never married and he didn't own a home, but he would travel around and he would live with friends. And basically as a way to pay them for their hospitality, he would tell them elaborate stories after dinner. And while he was telling the stories, he would cut a paper cut and then reveal it afterwards. And so I fell in love with that and his storytelling. And then this is how stuff happens to me. It's like, oh, that's really cool. That would be neat. So I thought about my party trick, which is that I can look at a blueprint like of your house. So like at a floor plan. And in my head, I can pull the layers up and I can see what your house looks like 3D in my mind, like without a computer. So I started thinking about that and paper cutting. And so I would do a paper cut and then I would pull the layers up in my head and create a reverse applique design. And I would do that in wool. And that's how that came about.
You artist types in your minds. Wow.
Rabbit hole, crazy rabbit, like all of it.
Well, see, and that's just it. Now there's art. You had really practiced art in one form or another, essentially your whole life. Because even interior decorating, I mean, that's art.
Yes.
That's the thread that carries you through all the way.
Yeah. It is. Definitely is. Yeah. It's fun how it all, like when you look back and you go, oh, wow, I learned that and that bled into that and that bled into that and that. Then I put that with that. It's really fun to look at that. And I love seeing that in other people too, like designers I've followed and seeing how their things kind of come together. It's really fun.
That's great. So what happened to cross stitch? Just kind of a gate opener for you and that was it?
Yeah, basically because I don't like counting.
Okay.
And it's like, even right now, it's like my husband, like when I put kits together and so we're like winding thread and stuff, I have to help David. He has to help me because I start winding it and then I lose count every time. And I'm like, darn, where was I? And so he has that job. And I was like, I ended up just not liking like counting. And then, you know, the older I got, the more my eyesight got really wonky. And so then it was like, oh, it gave me a headache trying to look at all that. Whereas just doing kind of freeform embroidery and slow stitching and just that kind of thing, really, I felt a lot of freedom in that because there wasn't any counting involved.
Math.
See, and that was the part I didn't like about working in construction is I had to be the bookkeeper in math. Ew, right? So, yeah.
Oh, man.
It's also why I like doing applique quilts, because the little pieces, like if you're having to cut little pieces and sew and these quarter inch and oh, my gosh. Yeah. So when you do applique, there's no math.
All right. Well, we all find our path. But that's it's interesting, the Valdani threads, because I can see that's a good strategy to say, hey, I want to connect with a thread company. And loyalty is a nice thing, but if it's not good thread and you're not getting the colors you want, eventually you just have to say goodbye. So obviously this thread works for you. It works for a lot of people, but.
What I love about it is I like the variegation in the thread. I like that a lot. And then I like that their dyeing methods aren't harmful to the environment. That, and I like that it's hand over dyed. That was something I think is really special. And like I said, I've been using it, golly, you know, what, 11, 12 years now. So I've just enjoyed it. It's just something I really enjoy using. And I've used the 3-strand floss and the pearl cottons. And yeah, they're just fun. I like the colors in them. And I've designed a couple thread collections with them.
Oh.
And yeah, and I've been to Houston Market and been in their booth and that kind of thing. They're just really, Daniela and Dana, the owners, they are just such wonderful, lovely people, and I just enjoy working with them.
That's really great when something like that happens. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Beth had encountered you with your Hexie a Day project.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what?
Yeah, I was drawn into that. I think you were starting it in 2019. Is that?
I started it in March of 2018. So okay. I wanted to do, you know, as designers, I was listening to one of your previous guests talk about it, that sometimes, you know, you got to just do something creative for yourself. And I was wanting to do something to celebrate turning 50. And I wanted to do something that...
an age most people want to just go away.
I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be 50. This is crazy. And I was like, I want to do something that celebrates the year and celebrates what I like to do and celebrates just something that I can do for me that I don't, you know, as a designer, you're always thinking about your customer or your student, you know, what they need. And I wanted to do something where I didn't have to write instructions, but could inspire people maybe to do the same thing. Like, okay, this is really fun and you can do this too. And you don't have to be an artist. And it's really easy. So what I did was, my birthday is March 27th, so I started the next day, the 28th. And what I would do, I stitched every single day a 1-inch Hexie. And I would sit there and I would think about, okay, yesterday, what was it that stood out to me? You know, was it something in nature? Was it something that happened? Was it a friend? What was it? And then it's kind of like I would meditate on what that was. And then I would doodle it down and then I would stitch it. And I stitched it in all green because I love, green's my favorite color. And so I stitched the whole thing. And then I added each Hexie. I started out in the center with a 50. And then I went around and added every day. I would stitch the Hexie and then I would stitch it to the day before. And I put them in a clockwise rotation. I kept going all the way around in a clockwise rotation to represent the passage of time for an entire year. And it was super fun. And I can look at each one of those and remember what it was that stood out to me because it was such a meditative thing to do.
Okay. And you didn't get bogged down with trying to think of something to stitch each day.
No, because I really did it. You know, it caused me to be present and to be mindful and to really, I just sat there, you know, and some days I would stitch something a little more elaborate than, you know, other days, just depending on time. But I literally would just I made time every day. I'd have my afternoon latte and I would just sit here and go, okay, what was it about yesterday that really stood out to me? What was it? And even when because I traveled and taught a lot then, and even when I was, you know, away, I would sit in my hotel room and go, okay, what was it? And there were so many beautiful, beautiful moments throughout that entire journey that I will never forget. And it was so nice to kind of memorialize them in thread.
Hmm.
Yes. And I know I looked in because I think you at one point offered like the Hexies and
yes.
I seriously considered it. And then I thought that is such a small space and a 1-inch square is not very big. And what would you, I didn't know what to put in that little Hexie. So I thought, oh, I'm going to have to pass on that one, but it was intriguing to me because I mean, when Gary said we were going to interview, I thought, I know who she is. She did the Hexies.
Yeah, it was real. You know, it's funny that you say that you didn't know what to put in them, because it actually inspired two other designers. Kathy Schmitz, she follows me as well, and it actually inspired her. She wrote a book about it. She calls them tiny treasures, and her. So it inspired her to write a book, and they're 1-inch hexies, and she has a book of little things that you can put in them. So it was kind of interesting. There was a lot of people that did them and stuck with it. Some other people made smaller projects with them. You know, they were inspired. They came and showed up every day to see what I stitched. And then they made some smaller projects, I think it was their granddaughter was graduating high school, and she kind of did like her school years in little hexies, you know, little mementos from that. I thought that was fun. And I think there was at least a handful of people that did the whole year project, and they had a good time with it. But it inspired two other designers that I know of to actually write books about it. So, yeah.
That's great.
I love when you know, every now and then we'll hear stories like that where people tie their life activities into needlework and chronicle it that way, as opposed to writing in a diary or journal or something. It's a neat
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. It really was.
Now, is that something that hangs on a wall or just put away because?
Nope, I put it in my little memory box of goodies.
Okay. That's great.
Yeah.
So you have quilting and wool applique, and mm-hmm. then embroidery.
Yes. So
and it seems like embroidery is the current hot activity, or do you try to keep a mix?
No, it's the current hot activity for
okay.
sure. Yeah, so it was kind of one of those things. I had traveled for many years teaching. I accomplished all the little goals I set out for myself, you know, being in quilt world and wool world and that kind of thing. And I was kind of getting to the spot, which often happens with me, where I was ready for a new adventure. And I was getting a little tired of traveling. I love my students. I love the energy of it all. But the driving and the packing and unpacking and the, oh my gosh. And I'm, my friends call me fun size. I'm really small. I'm like the size of like a 12-year-old height wise. I'm like a little kid. And so like I would carry 7 ginormous trunks of stuff everywhere and, you know, load them in the car. And I kind of was just getting really tired of all of that and having all that stuff and just being gone, because I am a homebody for sure. And so.
Well, yeah, because let me turn you here. Because
sure.
you were involved with the PBS show, Quilting Arts. I mean, you were really deep into the world of quilting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That was fun doing Quilting Arts TV. And being I went to Houston International Quilt Festival. That was something I always wanted to do. I wanted to be a teacher there. And I taught classes there for a couple years. 2019 was my last time. Of course, because of the pandemic.
Yeah.
And then, but I knew it was like, even though like in 2019, I remember sitting in Houston at the convention center, George R. Brown Convention Center. And I was up on the third floor and I was just looking out the windows and at the beautiful skyline and all the, you know, the view of the city. And I just felt in my heart, I was like, I think this is the last time I'm going to do this. You know, I was like, there was just something that I knew I was done with that chapter, you know? And I was like, I've loved every minute of it. I've loved everybody I've met and all my students and friends, but I'm just ready for this new adventure. And so then I was like, okay, well, I'll figure out how to, I had 11 jobs lined up for 2020. And there was something in me that just knew 2020 is going to be this year of clear vision. I'm going to have 2020 vision. And that was kind of my motto. And it was like, oh, and then here we go. It's like the pandemic came around and there was my way out. Just like when I lost my construction job, you know, it was like, okay, here's your out. You're going to lose your job. And oh, there's a pandemic and you can't travel. There you go. Start anew. It's time to start a new one.
All right. There's, I'm writing that down. One positive thing out of the pandemic. All right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been crazy, but for me, I'm very blessed that my husband still was able to keep his job, that, you know, we live pretty simple and I'm a homebody. We're both homebodies. So, for me, it was a year of just clearing things out and taking time to go, okay, what do you want to do next? And, you know, being grateful for everything that I did have. I mean, I've lost some friends and with it and people I know. And so, you know, I'm just grateful for, you know, that we were okay through it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's, yeah. Those of us who have come through okay, yeah, we're all blessed.
Yeah.
No doubt, yep. So the pandemic gives you that clean break. You can just literally walk away, and then so embroidery enters the picture. And what you had that kind of been cooking in the background all along, or?
Yes, indeed. Yeah, it sure had. I always wake up. It's like when I wake up in the morning, I always have like the best ideas. I always say it's like I have my best ideas in the morning before the rest of the day comes in and clogs it all up with stuff. You know, it's like you just go, oh, this is a cool idea. So I had been toying around with using just regular 100% Belgian linen and kind of looking at my paper cutting designs and storytelling and, all right, how can I combine all this together? And then I really like putting kits together for customers, you know, and, you know, I'm a small business. It's just me, myself, and I cannot get the bunnies or the cat to package anything. They refuse to help, you know how that is. So, but I like making things special for my customers. And, so I decided that I would buy some nice printing equipment and I would do my designs and print them on the linen myself and put kits together that way. And it brought me back to, that, you know, I love just kind of like cross stitch, you know, even though there's no counting, but I love that it's small and it's portable and, you know, you can do lots of other things with them. You don't have to frame them or hang them on a wall. And so I've got some ideas coming for next year that are going to be kind of fun. And I kind of incorporated some of my designs right now. They still kind of have that quilting theme. I mean, I've been a quilter over 30 some years, so I'm doing a block of the month. Called Seeds of Love. And that was inspired by a Tears for Fears song, Sowing the Seeds of Love. And that's really fun. So I have people all over the world that are doing that right now. And then I also started taking some of my favorite quilt blocks, like a log cabin and a wedding ring. And instead of making them fabric quilt blocks, I drew them as embroideries. And I'm a huge fan of nature and the natural world. So I'm incorporating flowers and bees and things like that in there. So the blocks are all nature inspired.
Yeah, well, that was what really caught my eye was those blocks, because it, you know, mixing embroidery with quilting. And so when like these blocks of the month, that's the intent then, is to sew them together as quilt blocks and then make a quilt? Or what is your goal with those, because it's just really neat, and I love the way you have the little border things and the little corner things to join the blocks. I mean, it's just a neat look all the way around.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, so I'm doing it that way. So the little hearts in the corner, those are your setting squares, and then the little vine pieces, those are called sashing.
And yeah, so see, to us non-quilters, those are little border things and squares. Yeah.
See,
yeah.
It's good. So now you know two new terms. There you go. And so, yeah, so then it'll be a quilt. And if you don't want to, I have it set up so that if you don't want to do the setting squares or the sashing, you don't have to.
Wait, setting squares. That way we got our setting squares and sashing. All right.
Yes. So the setting squares are the little hearts and then the sashing. So those are what go between the blocks like that.
See,
yes.
I'm going to really sound cool at the next party.
Yeah. You will. You'll be awesome. I know this. Yeah, cool turks. But yeah, so and then I have some, you can do it like that. I have some people that just bought, like a local friend here, she just bought one block that she really fell in love with, and she's making it into a pincushion for a friend of hers. Another friend bought another block that she liked, and she made it into a little sachet as a gift. I've had some people, they've used them, and they've, like, put them as pockets on things, like on a little notebook or something like that. You could put them in a textile book. There's, like, so many fun things you can do with them. They don't have to be a quilt.
Hmm. Right, and that's where I saw them. I saw them as cute, just nice little pillows because they're, you know, the color scheme is so pleasing. I could, you know, people are doing things where they're making pillows and sticking them in dough bowls. And that's what I saw them as, just because I think doing embroidery goes faster than doing cross stitch. And so that's what intrigued me about them, was that it's not cross stitch. It's embroidery. You get to try some new stitches.
Yes, absolutely. And her name's Joanne, and she lives in England, and she's super fun. She's doing the blocks, and she's also doing my little hearts. I call them tokens of my love. So I have them as where there's a little pocket on the back, and you can put a note or some chocolate or a little tea or something and send them as a gift to someone. And they have ribbon. You can hang them up. But she liked them. And she has an old four-poster bed, and she's making the heart tokens of my love, but she's not stuffing them. She's making them into a banner that'll go hang around her four-poster bed. And I think that is so amazing. I love that idea.
Oh, yeah, that's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. So, again, my tagline is Designs to Inspire, and I totally, like, geek out, get so excited when people, you know, take what I have and then they go, oh, Shell, look what I did with this. I'm going to do this with it. I'm like, please. I always say, send me pictures. I got to see it. This is so much fun.
Yeah, that has to be incredibly gratifying as an artist to see people take your designs and go do something with them.
It is. It really is. I love that. I love to inspire people to be creative. It's my calling for sure.
And I love that the embroidery designs are, you know, and this isn't an insult at all. They're very simple and easy, and to me, very approachable. And yet you get a very good effect out of them. But it's not like, you know, some embroidery designs you go, whoa, I could never do that in 100 years. But yours, you know, they just have that feel like, yeah, I think I can get into that one and have success with it. So,
yeah. And, you know, you really can make them, you know, I tend to use, I think my favorite quilt class I always taught was Quilting 101, you know, beginners, that kind of thing. And then, you know, being a teacher, I heard Gary, I actually heard you saying it, you know, everybody learns differently. So it's like, I try to set stuff up where it's easy for people to learn and they're not intimidated by something, you know, that it's like, it encourages like, okay, I really want to try that and I think I'll be successful. But then as you go on, you can make the designs a little more complicated. Or you can do different stitches. You know, I say, okay, I tend to use the same stitches over and over again because I enjoy them and I'm good at them. It's like, I don't want to use stitches like a blanket stitch or a buttonhole stitch, they call it. I am not good at it. I never have been. So why torture myself and do something that you're not good at, right? It's like, you know, it's like, why bother? It's like, you're not going to ever be good at it. You've tried it for 20 years and you still suck. So forget it. So it's like, so the stitches I use are pretty much basic stitches that aren't hard to do, but you can definitely use your own stitches. And I always encourage people, and I have some people that do that. They're like, oh, I'm terrible at that stitch too. I cannot do a French knot, but I can do a colonial knot. It's like, okay, see, or I just don't want to do those French knots there. I want to put a bead on it instead, or a button or something fun. And I just love that. I love that it gives people like this hopping off point, if you will, to be creative.
And you take, when it comes to embroidery, you take one of the big hurdles right out of it by printing right on the linen so people can get the pattern without having to do the tracing routine.
Yeah, I took that from a lot of my students, you know, that, you know, their hand isn't as steady as it used to be, and tracing can be intimidating. And especially when it's a fine, thin line like that. And, you know, it's like, oh, if it already comes printed on there, I mean, it doesn't get any easier than just stitch on the line. You know, you really, again, no counting. You don't have to think about it. It's ready to go. I call it ready, set, stitch. It's ready.
And it's nice that you're using such good linen. I think that's the other thing. You know, I hate to take time to stitch something where you're not using a nice quality material.
Right. Yeah, this is really, actually I had one of my customers, she's like, can I just get some of that to make, you know, to put some other blocks? And I'm like, oh, sure, you know, because it just feels really nice.
Have you had trouble getting it?
No, I bought when the pandemic started. I mean, it's expensive, but I bought extra rolls because I was like, okay, I need to definitely make sure I can get through the year with this project and not have shipping or supply issues. So, you know, knock on wood, thank goodness I have some and I can still get it. So I'm grateful.
Yeah, you're lucky is what you are.
Yeah, because it's been difficult.
But that's a good piece of foresight there to say, hey, wait a minute, I better make sure I got my back end covered on that because
I did that, and I knew Valdani thread. I mean, they ship it from Canada, but it's made in Romania, and I was like, I'm gonna go ahead and stock up on the colors I always use because Lord only knows. So yeah, I did that. I spent some serious coins, but I'm grateful I did.
Yeah, and then so you're able to print the patterns right on the linen at home there? You don't have to send that out then?
No, I bought, when I decided that, okay, I'm going to do this, I sold all my wool I had and all the embellishments and all that gear that I would take to classes. And I bought myself a really nice printer. And so, you know, it's not as fast as like a commercial printer would be, but you know, it's okay because I'm a small business. So I cut all the pieces, I design everything, scan it in, make the write the pattern, get it all ready for print, and then I cut the linen, and then I feed it through the printer one at a time.
Well, but see, that's, you know, that's one of the things that we've seen with a lot of designers in this pandemic is taking steps to basically future-proof their business to make sure that something like this doesn't shut them down in the future And so the more you can make yourself independent, the better you are. And sounds like you found a way.
Yeah.
In the business world, the manufacturing world, that's becoming now an issue as we emerge from the pandemic, is that manufacturers are starting to look at the supply chain. Because because it hurt a lot of them. They had business, but they couldn't satisfy it because they couldn't get material. And a lot of talk these days about what are we going to do to make sure that if something like this happens again, you know, a ship gets stuck in the Suez Canal, you name it, that that we can still do business at the level we need to do it. And And it, you know, so it's, I mean, that's big corporations. But it trickles all the way down to small one-person businesses. You have to start thinking about those things because, you know, a perfect example is the needlework business, which is just flying high. I mean, literally took off. And if you can't get materials, it really puts you in a spot to, and you can't take advantage of the business. And you called it right, so...
Yeah, I'm grateful that I had that 2020 vision. Believe me, it was just like, okay, you better... Better do this. So, and you're right, because there's so much. And even, you know, one of my suppliers that I would get stuff from, normally I place, you know, my order, and then I would get, oh, your order, you know, your goodies have shipped. And it would be like the next morning they'd say it would ship. And then recently it was like a week, and I'm like, what is going on? And I messaged them, you know, and I was like, is everybody okay? I just want to make sure. You guys are always so fast. And are you all right? And, you know, and that it took 2 weeks. It normally would take 3 days, and it took 2 weeks to get to me. So, yeah.
Now, go ahead.
Yeah, that makes it tough. That just makes it tough for small businesses to keep their supplies going too.
Yeah, you really have to plan ahead. And then, you know, and then again, you don't want to get too far ahead, because then you don't want to be stuck on inventory that doesn't go anywhere. You know, it's like now
right,
that things
where do you
are,
store it?
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, okay, so, and, you know, now that places are starting to open up again, you know, I mean, good golly, I sold so much thread at the beginning of the pandemic because nobody could go to the big shows and buy it, you know. So I was having lots and lots of thread sales. But now that places are opening back up and, you know, shops and some of the shows are coming around again, I know that it'll die down from that. So.
So what's the situation in the house? Do we have a room that's a warehouse, or... is stuff everywhere? How does that work?
I have an office downstairs. So I call it Bayfield Cottage. I have a small cottage, and I have the office downstairs, and then I have a bonus room upstairs. That's my studio. And so my bunnies, they're litter box trained, and they have a playpen area in my office. And then my studio area up here, everything is, you know, I'm because I worked in interior decorating and custom home building, I have to have everything pretty. It's just how it is. It's gotta be. Most everybody's just like, do you even work in there? Like, you don't have stuff and stuff everywhere. And I'm like, I can't work in it. I gotta have it pretty. It's gotta be organized pretty. Everything's gotta be pretty. And so everything is in drawers and furniture and cabinets, and I'm one of those people, I have like two things I'm working on, and I might be drawing something, but I cannot have a messy desk. I've never been like that. My desk has to be totally clear before I can get to work. And so it's all up here in my studio, which I call Bunnyville. And it's all tidy and pretty. And this is my sixth home. And out of all my homes, this is the most beautiful studio I've ever had. I have so much natural light, and I live in a really cute neighborhood that So I look out down the street, and there's a white picket fence and roses and kids riding bikes. And I am grateful every day. I don't take it for granted because I feel really lucky.
Okay, I'm going to pause for a moment here because now I have to go clean up my desk. Oh, man. I'm looking around. Okay, never mind.
Yeah. So I have to ask you, how far ahead do you work? Like, you've got these series going. So do you have the whole series planned out for the year?
No. I am one of those just sometimes I'll have 1 or 2 months ahead. I know what I'm going to do. I can have this plan. But I totally have to just let it just come. And so I've always been lucky like that. It's like, okay, I got this coming. And then it's just the ideal pop. So on my block of the month, my Seeds of Love, I have up till July done. It only goes through September. And I visually know what the other blocks will look like, but I haven't drawn them yet. And so I tend to do that. I need to be a little more, I know a lot of fellow designers, like right now they're doing like pumpkins and Christmas. And I have never been able to do that. It's just like, it is 91 degrees. It is so stinking hot. And I do not want to make a pumpkin or Christmas right now. I just can't do it.
I so agree.
And so normally it's like, you know, oh, it's September. I think I'll make a pumpkin. And then I just make a pumpkin. And there it is. I'm always like in the moment. I'm just one of those people that I'm in this moment and inspiration just comes to me. And it's like, you know, even with the, you know, Bees in the Cabin and the Wedding Ring one, it was just, I literally woke up that morning and I was like, oh, I'm going to draw that. That would be really cool. And I came upstairs and I drew it. And there you go. That's how it works.
Ooh, one of those that has an idea and actually puts it down so you don't forget it. Oh, man.
Yes. I usually have to, if I'm thinking of it, because otherwise it's gone. And then you know how it is. The older you get, then it's like, yeah, if you don't write it down, it's definitely gone. It's like, why did I even come in this room? I don't know.
Yeah, that little thing. Why did I come in this room? Yeah, I love that.
Why am I holding my car keys? Where am I going?
Yep. But the good thing about that, when it happens, is usually there are two or three things that you did along the way to forgetting what you really wanted to do. So
yes.
Progress gets made. It's just weird.
It is.
Michelle, thanks. This has been a blast. Wow.
Oh, thank you. Y'all are wonderful. Thank you so much.
So much to learn here. So, okay, folks, the Raspberry Rabbits, raspberryrabbits with an S on the end, .com is the website. Go check out these Seeds of Love, Token of My Love Hearts, Wedding Ring Roses. Go check those out. Really some neat things and some great way to do some really fun embroidery. Really nice designs. So thanks, Michelle. Really enjoyed it.
Thank you. Take care.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.